Hey, this is Mike. Last week we started discussing the Calvin Hobbes documentary, Dear Mr. Watterson, and we talked about it so much that we had split into two parts. So please join us today for part two of Dear Mr. Watterson. Anyway, I'm trying to think. Were there any other web comics at the time?
Oh, well, I mean, there's, more web comics than we can even name,
Yeah.
but not that
They're
I.
all dead. They're all dead and gone. Fuck web comics.
Yes,
Stupid web comics.
fuck web comics. The those websites that drip feed you comics that you scroll through in portrait mode. That's what it's all about now.
Nowadays, what I want is I want now what we have instead of web comics is we have, a picture of like, I don't know, like a guy in a sweatsuit, and he'll say that feeling when no girlfriend. And I'm like, yeah, I know that, relatable,
My
that's what
favorite
web
web
comics are
comic is the
now.
guy with the collapsed skull who has a liberal opinion, and then the guy who looks like Hulk Hogan who has a conservative opinion. That comic is great.
Yeah, those have a name.
Wojak, yeah.
Yeah, they named them. They named that. I think it's named after BoJack Horseman.
That makes more sense than anything I thought of.
That's all I know. I
Wojak.
don't. Yeah, because you see it and it's like BoJack. You go, whoa, Jack! It's like because you see him and you're like, whoa, Jack! Better slow down there. You're gonna cut yourself on that edgy opinion.
Hit the road, Jack.
Don't you come back no more. So anyway, web comics.
Webcomics. Calvin and Hobbes.
When I say web comics, consign them all to the dustbin of history.
Yep.
Every single fucking one of them. Garbo, absolute garbo. I am not
Especially the
bitter.
ones by people we know. You're the
That's
worst.
right. All of them. Everyone in the Discord channel. We are calling you out, you bunch of fucking losers. Look at you all making art. Fuck off. Anyway, I shouldn't say
Anyway,
that
Bill
because some.
Waterson, he was good.
Yeah, he was good. He was pretty good. He was good at his job. Though this documentary is a little funny because it's a whole documentary of Bill Watterson, and Bill Watterson doesn't appear in it.
Yeah, what if they had a party for Bill Waterson and he didn't come?
I mean, I get that he's very reclusive, but it kind of makes this documentary a little weird because I was
It
thinking
feels
like,
like he's
oh,
dead, doesn't it?
yeah, I was thinking like, okay, look, the big reveal at the end is that we're going to see Bill Watterson, right? I mean, you got him, right? You got Bill Watterson. You kind of have to get Bill Watterson if you're going to make this documentary. I missed something in the beginning. I thought that mustache man was Bill Watterson for half this movie. But that turned out that was just the evil syndicate man who kept trying to make him sell out.
His dark mirror reflection.
Yeah, it was just his Mephistopheles there,
Mr. Potifleece.
Yeah. But yeah, we don't get Bill Watterson. That kind of makes it a little bit like the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark documentary, which is very similar in format because it's like 90% just like, oh, here's people who liked this thing.
But
Let's get
that's
their
what we get for
opinions.
our podcast all the time anyway.
That's true. But it's different when we do it because we're just so charismatic. Everybody wants to know our opinions. Every day they're tuning in and being like, oh, they're gonna look at the Calvin Hobbes documentary. I wonder if what Mike and Ethan will think of that.
I actually had a friend who wanted to be part of this. I should have said to come,
Oh,
but
shit. That's well, some friend you are,
yeah,
Ethan.
I kind of suck. Sorry. Sorry, slug.
Oh, sorry, Slug. Well, is
You're
there any
invited for the next
other?
one. How about that?
Yeah. Come back when we do. Well, you know what? When we do the Robot Chicken episode about Calvin Hobbes bit or whatever, we could probably do all the fan Calvin Hobbes stuff in once. Apparently, there's
Yeah,
a lot of it.
there is a lot.
We do get like a clip sequence where we see all the fan made Calvin and Hobbes stuff.
Yeah, my favorite is Hobbs and Me. Have you seen that one?
I have not seen that one.
It's literally just the actual strips being remade as like 15-second films starring adult man as Calvin and an adult man in tiger pajamas as Hobbs.
Oh, and I think they showed clips of that in this documentary, didn't they?
They probably did. Yeah, it's black and white.
Oh, maybe not. Okay. I don't think I saw that. I did see one, but there was color.
Hmm. Yeah, they do basically the thing that everyone does when you read a Calvin and Hobbes comic is you kind of assign a cadence and a voice to these characters. And the one that worked out really well, I think, was the one where Calvin is writing his letter to Santa. And he's like, hi, it's me, Calvin. This year I've been extra good. And Hobbes is like, you think you need a drink of water? Yeah, I think I do.
Hello?
Hello? Oh, I must have cut out the audio with that.
I'm sorry. That was very weird because you were saying, like, Calvin said, I think I need a drink of water. I was like, what? What just happened there?
Well, maybe you did get all of it.
was that what? Yeah, so there are a lot of fan Calvin Hobbes things which are referenced in this. Yes. And a lot of we get a lot of like, I love Calvin and Hobbes. It was good.
Yeah. And that's kind of the issue with it, is that, you know, it's just about, you know, fans spouting about how untouchable and how beautiful Calvin and Hobbes is. But at the same time, you do get a little bit of, you know, recognition that this is a business and you know, we can't hold it against Mr. Watterson if, you know, he couldn't hack it.
Yeah, we do get some new, like, I won't say new information, but like, you know, talking to some of the other cartoonists is kind of insightful, especially when he talks about that address he gave that apparently rankled Mort Walker so much.
Yeah.
A little bit about when they talk about how he didn't merchandise, hearing it from how other cartoonists reacted and how this from the syndicate like Stooge, that's kind of interesting, you know?
The syndicate does in fact still have the rights to merchandise. They could at any time, but they don't. So
that's interesting. So wait a minute. When you say they don't have to get his permission?
Yeah. They don't have to get his permission, but they, you know, retain, you know, they're like, you know, we're going to do it the way he wants anyway.
So was that always the case?
Yes.
So, okay. Well, that actually kind of changes things a little bit. That's because, maybe not, because I guess they probably understood that, like, we could merchandise. Maybe that might be killing the golden goose, though. Since then he may get pissed enough to just stop making the comic, and then you can't merchandise what you can't have, you know, what you don't have.
And then he stopped making the comic, and, you know, you'd think they would be like, okay, now we're going to merchandise it to hell and back, but they didn't. So Watterson's, you know, reputation as the last pure artist might be more valuable than to the syndicate than all those merchandising dollars.
Interesting. So in the end, he played himself. He played right into their hands, and now they're making even more money on his purity.
If they're making more money, but I mean, you can still buy Calvin and Hobbes books everywhere books are sold. Yeah. So
I wonder if part of it is that they could merchandise now without, like, you know, and they, it's not like they'd be losing out, but just, I wonder if his wishes are so well known that fans would actually object to it being merchandised at this point.
Unless there was like a thing showing him, you know, actually being part of the thing, like, you know, helping to design all of the merchandise and whatever, you know, if I didn't feel like it was absolutely his idea, then I probably would be like, I'm not buying this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, because I feel like there are very few things that people would, you know, we live in a time when artists are denigrated, you know.
Absolutely. Every artist now gets told, why don't I just have an AI and do this for free?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I've seen this, like, even before AI, like, you know, I spend a lot of time on, like, you know, the porn chan boards, you know?
Oh, really? Well, tell us about that.
Well, you know, just lurking, you know, to look at, I'm like, let me go see what's happening. Okay, I shouldn't say a lot of time, but occasionally I'm like, I'm going to go look and see what's on BBW Chan, you know, see what the lay of the land is, any new art. And what I've noticed is people on these boards, they hate artists. They absolutely hate them. They want the art, you know, they want to like, but they hate the fact that it has to be made by people. And, you know, they will, you know, they're constantly pirating, stealing stuff, you know, demanding it be there, given to them for free. And when artists occasionally go in there and call them out on it, they will basically say, and I've seen this exact phrase of saying like, doesn't matter. Oh, what are you going to do? Stop drawing? It doesn't matter. There'll be an endless parade of new people and you're worthless. Who cares? And that's the attitude that I saw there. And now that we have AI, that's the attitude that's being revealed everywhere. You know, people don't care about artists. If they can get something cheaper or for free, they'll do it. So, you know, the fact that Bill Watterson, that people actually do, you know, respect him enough as an artist that they may actually refuse to buy something and that is against his wishes is actually pretty remarkable in this day and age.
Yeah.
You know, because we know that people will buy whatever they want, you know, regardless of anything. We're seeing like all that with Hogwarts Legacy, you know.
Yeah.
Where it's like, can you not buy it? Oh, tell me what to do. Oh,
you know, and the ones who do buy it are like, here, I bought it, but I gave to charity. Please tell me I'm good.
It's like, sorry, it doesn't work that way, pal. You know? But yeah, so it is interesting that Bill Watterson may be, you know, the fact that he did stand up for so unequivocally for what he believed in, even though we all kind of like talk shit about him for doing it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think people do respect that. And
so while Calvin and Hobbes may not be the greatest comic ever made, I think Bill Watterson might be, you know, the greatest living cartoonist.
I think that would be fair to say. I mean, you know, even, you know, I was thinking, cause like the thing about never selling out, you know, that he did, I guess it's again, like, it's hard to imagine that. It's hard to imagine being in that position, but I think maybe part of it is like, you know, like we're saying like, oh, you know, if you just did a, you know, a sticker, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the harm in that? But maybe, I mean, I think thinking about it now, it's like, it's probably like, you know, it's the, you know, there's no harm in that, but like, but at that point but you know, like you merchandise stickers, that's fine. Right. And then merchandise, I don't know, a plushie, and that's not fine too. And, you know, and then eventually one day Lockheed Martin comes to you and they're like, can we put Calvin on like the nose of these bombs? And at that point you're like, well, I've already merchandised so much other stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Is it really that bad? And I think like, you know, you're always on a slippery slope to something that, you know, is that will not, maybe not like that extreme, but like that it will go against your morals. And at that point, you know, you've established you're a whore, so you're just haggling over price. So the only way to completely avoid that situation is and never have that temptation. Because at that point, you're like, well, I've done all this other stuff. I might as well keep going, mm-hmm. you know, is just to never start. And I think that's probably what Bill Watterson was thinking. You know, he was looking ahead and was like, the only way to win is to not play the game,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it is unfortunate, though, that we can't hear his take on it, because I think that would make this documentary a little richer, you know.
You know, I keep coming back to 2009 because something else I did in 2009 was visit the Weird Al Yankovic convention, where we had a whole bunch of, you know, comedy rock people visiting to pay homage to Weird Al. And guess who didn't come?
Weird Al?
Weird Al. He was in Hawaii. He sent a taped greeting. No, he lives in Hawaii most of the time.
Oh, well, that's smart. I mean, that's a smart thing to do. He sent a taped greeting, though? That was nice.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah. His whole band came. They all gave, you know, performance, individualized performances of their own kind of work. And they're, and, you know, his whole band is fantastic just on their own. And they gave a lot of inside information about songs that you might not have guessed. Like, we were informed that the song, the at the time brand new song, Skipper Dan, was actually designed to sound like Weezer. And everyone was like, what? We thought it was Fountains of Wayne.
Oh, wow. It does kind of have a Weezer sound now that I think about it. Man,
Skipper Dan is a great song. So
it is. It is. It's funny because it's a very funny song, but it's also got some pathos in it.
Yeah, it has. You know, what's funny is that the Weird Al song "Everything You Know Is Wrong." That's his pastiche of "They Might Be Giants." But
I can hear that.
Yeah, but Skipper Dan feels like a legit "They Might Be Giants" song because it's funny, but it's also really sad.
It is funny that Weird Al would be like, I'm gonna do a pastiche of "They Might Be Giants," and it's like, okay, I mean, they're kind of already sort of a comedy band, but
sorta, yeah. There's a story about how one time when "They Might Be Giants" were gonna go on stage, John Linnell of "They Might Be Giants" came back and addressed the band and said, okay, Weird Al Yankovic is in the audience. Don't get your photo taken with him. Don't go out to shake hands with him. And the drummer, Dan Hickey, was disappointed. I wanted to meet Weird Al. But the important thing was that we wanted to set ourselves apart from, you know, we wanted to say that we can be funny without being a comedy band.
Yeah, you don't want to just be like, you know, I don't know. There's comedy music. It's an unfortunate genre.
Yeah, you become a comedy musician, and you know, 20 years down the road, something really bad is going to happen. Unless you're Weird Al, thank God.
Yes, like there's a lot of musicians that are very funny, you know, like Weird Al, like They Might Be Giants, but are not comedy.
Yeah,
Frank Zappa. Yeah, I mean most. Anyone that is on Dr. Mento who's good is not really a comedy musician. They're music that is also funny. But like comedy, like music or not, I guess it's like pretty much like Weird Al does it good and nobody else can.
Yeah,
you know, like that is my feeling on it.
Because
if you're
partly because Weird Al is a musician, and a lot of these other ones put the comedy part first, and they, you know, fill in for their lack of musical talent with, oh, who was that one guy? Luke Ski, the guy who was like briefly the heir to the Weird Al throne. He just like got like karaoke tracks and sang over them, as I understand.
Oh, really? That guy fucking sucks. I've heard his music, and it was like that guy. Wait, what, did he get like? Did Weird Al like pass his crown to that guy?
No, never.
Oh, thank God! I was gonna say that. Like, I feel like you would only do that. Like, I don't know if it was a King Ralph situation where like the line of succession was like destroyed in like a terrible like plane accident and like, you know, the eight people in line and then it's Luke Ski. Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, Weird Al is dead. Who's the new clown prince of music? Oh my God, Jonathan Colton is dead too? Oh, oh my God, Ninja Sex Party is dead? Who do we have it
to? Yeah, eventually you're going to get down to like, oh, the, you know, the
Ray Stevens is dead? Good.
Oh wow, Ray Stevens. Now talk about like that
Scott Adams of comedy music.
Yeah.
Actually, man. More like the Gallagher of comedy music.
Man, you know, it's Ray Stevens, how the mighty have fallen. Because you know, I'm not gonna like say that like everyone loves Guitar Zan.
Yeah.
You know? And I will say that Ahab the Arab was a product of its time. Mm. I won't hold it against him because that was a thing people did back then. Hasn't aged well. Well, you know, it is what it is. But then the fact that like his recently he's just decided like, I don't know. He just does like, he's just like, what if Tucker Carlson did music? It's just weird. It's just, yeah, his recent stuff is like, oh wow, this is it's bad, but it's like, you know, it's like what Victoria Jackson did after, you know, when she left. Did she date Weird Al actually?
Yeah, they were dating and they went to church together.
To get married?
No, they just went to church. That's an interesting thing about Weird Al is that he's a Christian, but he doesn't say anything about it as part of his persona.
Well, good. Yeah. Also, I honestly feel like if people knew he was Christian, they'd be like, well, he's not as funny now. You know, but I mean,
are you thinking
like,
that?
Everyone's all like, he's one of those funny Jews, you know? And then I hear he's Christian, like, well, no, that's not funny. It's like when Will Sasso lost weight. It's like, well, he's not funny anymore, you know? What's up with that? No, I didn't know that Weird Al was Christian. So was this, did they go to church as a date?
Yeah, apparently. That, like, she says that Victoria Jackson said she's one of the few people who's seen his kind of pious side, which is an interesting thing. But, I mean, you know, when you make a living the way Weird Al does, it would be hard to feel like I did all this myself. You know, you'd have to feel like something was guiding you.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It's just interesting. It's not what I would have expected from Weird Al, but you know, as long as he's not like, I don't know, funding Chick-fil-A or something.
No. Yeah, when Weird Al got his star on the Walk of Fame, he said, I'd like to thank everyone, but I'd like to make a specific request. Please don't take a pickaxe to my star unless I do some absolutely ghoulish things as president. Then it's okay.
Yeah. Actually, and he wouldn't be endorsing Chick-fil-A. I forgot he's vegan, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. So the only thing you can eat at Taco Bell is the bean burrito.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, Taco Bell doesn't have a lot of good vegan selections, I've noticed. Or even...
Yeah, not even Baja Blast. It has lard in it.
What?
I'm kidding.
I was going to say, isn't that a drink? I know you can get some vegetarian things there, but, you know, you're still limited because it's basically the bean and cheese burrito or the bean and rice and cheese burrito. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not a huge Taco Bell fan. My wife likes it, and my dad says it's his favorite Mexican restaurant. He loves to say that. He says it every time I see him.
Your boomer dad, whom we all love.
Yes. You know, he also, his favorite pizza, Little Caesars.
Well, one of my favorites, one of my top five.
Yeah. It's just funny because every time I see him, he's like, have you heard about this new pizza place? It's called Little Caesars. It's amazing. It's like, yes, I have heard of Little Caesars. Yeah. I am aware.
We had Little Caesars last time I saw you. We had that weird Batman-shaped pizza.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It was to sell, I believe it was to, was it to promote something?
To promote the Batman, I think.
Ah, that's right. It definitely helped raise awareness of the Batman in the household.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see the Batman, but I ate the Batman pizza.
Yeah. I didn't see the Batman either, but I've heard of the Batman, and because of this pizza, which we just discussed right now, I remember the Batman. Anyway, who did the Batman fight?
The Batman fights Joker, Riddler, Penguin, and the Two-Face.
Oh, okay, there we go. The Catwoman. We got off on a tangent here about a bunch of things. But we were talking about... Well, we were talking about Taco Bell, but it was Calvin and Hobbes.
Yes.
Let's see. So a lot of this, like you said, it's just talking to fans of Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, fans of the strip. And one thing that came up that definitely resonated with me was all the kids who were like, I learned to read from this strip. And that's, I did not learn to read from Calvin and Hobbes. I learned to read from Garfield. It is important to recognize how much of my vocabulary, including the word vocabulary, comes from Garfield.
Oh, wow. I probably also learned mostly from Garfield. I don't think I was, did not start reading Calvin Hobbes till slightly later. Well, actually around the time when it actually did start in the paper, but I was, you know, I was old enough that I had already started reading cut my teeth on an earlier comic, Garfield.
Yeah.
Because Garfield awakened my love of reading, because they were all those comics where Garfield is like, you know, it's like, oh, Garfield is eating a giant ham, but what is he saying? I need to know if he's saying something sexy. So anyway, so that's why I learned to read.
I thought it was to read The Mouse and the Motorcycle.
Oh yeah, I did learn to read on The Mouse and the Motorcycle in school. That was the book we were reading. Mm-hmm. That and Anna and the Big Storm. And
I don't remember that one. Hmm.
Yeah, it was about a girl in a big storm.
Well then,
I don't remember anything else. Shoeshine Girl, we read that one too. Hmm. Wow. Okay. Memories. The one thing actually there is that we said that there wasn't a lot of new information in this documentary. One thing that I did not know was that when he visited Bill Watterson's hometown of Chagrin Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Where it turns out that the scene on the back of one of the Calvin Hobbes books of Calvin smashing a town as a giant is actually a depiction of the downtown area of Chagrin Falls, which was interesting. You know,
Chagrin Falls looks like a lovely place.
Yeah, yeah. I actually was wondering, you know, because watching this, it was like, you know, I'm sure that Chagrin Falls, you know, Bill Watterson is probably one of their, you know, biggest celebrities.
Yeah,
you know, local boy does good. I wonder, like, if are there any monuments to Calvin there? I'm guessing probably not.
Probably not. No.
But so it's probably a little different than Muncie, Indiana, which has, you know, Garfield statues all over the place. But it did make me wonder. I think a very interesting road trip would be to go to the hometowns of various cartoonists and try and see which ones, you know, really promote their hometown heroes and which ones don't.
Damn. Let's get a Kickstarter started. This is a movie we can make.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it can be international. We'll go up to Canada and see where Lynn Johnson's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do it. Let's see. Yeah. Visit Muncie, visit, Chagrin Falls, visit Santa Rosa and Needles, and I think Charles Schulz lived in Minnesota too, so
that sounds right.
No, but who else? I mean, I can't really think of anywhere else. I know where Camp Swampy is in Missouri, but I don't know if that's where Mort Walker lived.
I don't know. But let's see. One second. Let me check out Dayton, Ohio. Is the home of Kathy Dziedzicz?
Oh, wow.
It is the sixth largest city in the U.S. state of Ohio. Let me see. Oh, no. They've got other stuff that is apparently important there, so maybe they don't really lean into the Kathy, you know. But we could go to where was that place in England where they have the anti-cap statue?
The city where he lives, which is and we kept mispronouncing it the whole time. Oh, this is our chance. Where does anti-cap live?
Wasn't it like Gloucestershire or something?
Gloucestershire or Hartlepool.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, and we called it Hartlepool, and our British friends were cringing every time we said it. No, sorry, it's Hartlepool. Please accept our apology.
Yeah. You know what?
We also apologize to Tom Hoogie for all the times we mispronounced his name.
Oh my gosh. So I regret to tell you that Kathy Jisizowitz is not even the most famous cartoonist to come out of Dayton, Ohio.
Oh really? Who's is it Scott McNeil or Scott that one dude?
I would believe the most famous cartoonist out of Dayton, Ohio. Well, this may be debatable. Mike Peters of Mother Goose and Grimm is also from.
Oh.
And so is Milton Caniff, who is the Terry and the Pirates.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and there are plenty of other famous people. Irma Bombeck, apparently also from there. As is Tim Wagoner, the horror writer, too. So a lot of big names. Sorry, Kathy Jisizowitz. I guess you're probably not going to get a statue.
But, on the other hand, you know, you could do a statue homaging all of them. You could have, you know, Terry of Terry and the Pirates holding up Kathy in a bridal position. And
you could. I mean, they're really missing out. They have all these big names. They should capitalize.
While Irma Bombeck sits at the kitchen table watching with a, you know, box of bonbons. And
I think the question is, we need to find cartoonists who come from like fly spec towns. You know?
Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking up where I was trying to find where Bill Amond grew up, and I'm not finding anything.
Oh, really? Huh. Interesting. Well, let's see. He was also Massachusetts. So yep. That doesn't really help. Oh, is that how big is that?
What, you know, how big is Northampton? Yeah. Northampton is 29,000 people. So that's pretty small.
Yeah, he may be a big deal there, you know? Let me take a look. Northampton, Massachusetts.
List of people from Northampton. List of people from Northampton, Calvin Coolidge.
Oh, man.
Sojourner Truth? Damn.
Oh.
Kevin Eastman? Wow. Oh, shit. Kurt Vonnegut? Jeez. Northampton is a fucking...
okay, so that one may not...
Eric Carle? Jeez.
Jeff Jacks of Questionable Content.
Oh, my God.
So, Peter Laird, not just Eastman, but Laird as well.
Yep.
So, okay. Well,
okay. So Northampton is like the center. I didn't realize it was such a center of, you know, community for the entire country. Jeez.
Wow. Okay. I guess we'll have to do some more research to actually find shitty podunk towns that like. You know, that really like play up there like cartoonists. All right.
Not to say that Chagrin Falls is a shitty podunk town. Actually, it's the opposite. They don't play up their cartoonist.
Yeah, but I bet they would if you let them.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting seeing like the when they went to the library and they got to see some of his early work.
Oh, yeah. We saw one of the cartoons that he did for the Mark Twain magazine that we were looking at.
Yeah. And as well as some other ones. It was funny when the guy was making that, he was like, oh, his signature looks different. Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess.
We have to find something to remark on. This is a movie.
Yeah, I mean, we got to fill time. They got to fill an hour and a half. So there was that other guy who apparently wrote a book about Calvin and Hobbes. And I feel like, did that guy also not get to interview Bill Watterson for his book?
No, he didn't get to interview him either. It was called In Search of Bill Watterson.
Well, I guess there's the answer to that question.
Now, as a kid, did you have any... Did Calvin's world look familiar to you with all of its heavy foresting and undeveloped areas?
It did actually. I actually, because I grew up, or when I was really into Calvin Hobbes, at least, I was living in Gaithersburg, Maryland. And we were living in what was a new development, right at the end of the metro line from DC. You know, this was they were basically, they had just completely bulldozed a forest and were putting in like endless suburban sprawl. Right. Now, at the time, most of the suburban sprawl wasn't really there yet. So basically they were sprawl, and then our house was at the very end. And then beyond that was just this wasteland that had giant like mountains of dirt and wood chips and gravel pits. And you know, it was like great because we'd ride our bikes through it. And like, you know, we were like, this is the greatest thing ever. But there were also bits of forest that had been left behind. So like they would leave like a, you know, like a, in our backyard, they had left like a grove of maybe like a dozen trees or something.
Wow.
And there were other spots where there were forests still around. So I remember we would ride our bikes out to these little bits of forest and, you know, kind of explore a little bit. And, you know, we had, they were still animals that were like displaced. We'd get like big snakes and deer in the neighborhood all the time. But it felt a lot like Calvin's world. And I remember actually just assuming that Calvin was living in Maryland because of that.
Well, he didn't live anywhere near like what I had as a kid. The closest thing I had to that was when I lived in San Diego, when there was an enormous undeveloped canyon near my house. And, you know, there weren't the, you know, wonderful, colorful sugar maple trees or the towering woods and waterfalls. Forget it. This is California. But what we, so I was trying to figure out where Calvin lived as a kid. And I remember the one where he and Hobbes went to Mars. And when they came back, they were trying to find their way home. And Calvin says, if I remember my atlas, we live in a big purple country. And Hobbes says, and our house is right next to the giant letter E in the word states. So I looked, I got out our atlas and I looked at the, looked for the town that was close to the closest to the letter E in states, and it was Indianapolis. So I assumed that Calvin lived in Indianapolis, and that's pretty close actually.
Yeah. That's not too far off.
Yeah. It's closer to Garfield, but
well, you know, maybe that was an homage.
Maybe.
You know, do you think, well, if you think about it, there's nothing that indicates that that the Arbuckles and the Calvins, last name unknown, don't live in the same town, if you think about it.
You're right. I mean, how would we know if he referred to the Calvin by last name?
Wait a second. I just realized something. Do any comic strip characters, do any of them live in a named city?
There is a name for the city that the For Better or For Worse family lives in, but I don't remember what it is.
Okay. Oh, they like probably just live in Montreal or something.
No, you know, Wolverhampton or something like that. I don't know. But I think a lot of them do exist in, you know, actual cities, but
I mean, they're never named cities. So you could in theory just say like, oh, the extended universe here, they all live in the same town, you know,
isn't that the plot of Popeye Meets the Man Who Hated Laughter?
It kind of is. And it also fits with the great comic strip Switcheroonie, because we know that they can meet each other. In fact, when Blondie had that big party, all the other comic strip characters came to see them. And it makes sense to think they all live in the same town. We just rarely see them.
Calvin and Hobbes didn't come. Maybe they live in a different town.
Well, that's true. Well, you know, Calvin Hobbes, they're probably just, look.
They probably weren't invited for smart reasons.
Yeah, they probably weren't invited because Blondie's like, hey, we're having an anniversary party. Well, are you going to invite a child? Of course not.
Who do you want to invite? The noodle incident kid? Are you kidding?
They're like, no, invite that weird man with his like his talking cat instead. Sorry, the cat doesn't talk, actually. It's a cat.
The cat who can think, and sometimes he acts like he can hear the cat's thoughts, even though he doesn't.
Yeah.
I brought my cat with me. He can think.
I guess like Beetle Bailey, Camp Swampy, that's something else. Though there is a town nearby that they can visit. Yeah. So possibly it's this fictional town that I'm just assuming all comic strip characters live in at this point. But except for Andy Capp, who lives in England, and the better for worse, who live in Canada.
Hagar lives in Denmark and or possibly Norway. And
yeah. And also a little time wise would be different. So he's not there. Wait a minute.
Croc lives in Algeria.
So the only comic that I can think of off the top of my head that is takes place in America and names the town they live in is Heathcliff.
Yeah, that's right. Westminster. Which is so funny because you keep thinking it's England.
It sounds like England, doesn't it?
Westminster, yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like New England, that's for sure.
That's true. I mean, it sounds like a place where a lovable chimney sweep would come from. So they all live in Westminster. That is my new headcanon. So.
Oh, and that's why there's the Cadillac Cats. They're all the stars of their own comic strips, and we've just never seen them.
Yeah, think about it.
Matter of fact, everyone you meet could be the star of a comic strip that you've never read.
That fishmonger has his own comic strip.
Yeah, where Heathcliff is just a minor character who runs in and grabs a fish and causes him to shout his trademark catchphrase, "Darn that cat! I need to think of a better catchphrase."
Well, anyway, so now we have, well, there we go.
We've solved comics for you.
We have solved. You're welcome, people.
Thanks, Mr. Watterson.
So did you ever write a letter to Mr. Watterson?
No, I didn't. I would have liked to. I think we wrote a letter to him when he did the comic that turned out to be about his cat, the one about how we'll always meet again in dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we had that one on our refrigerator for years, and it's you know, it feels bad to be pointing the finger at Burke Breathed for being for being kind of sappy, but when Bill Watterson was absolutely able to do that too, but I think he was able to pull it off better. I think he was able to do serious stuff like the story about the little raccoon a lot better than Breathed did.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, as Burke Breathed, I mean, I think I've waffled back and forth on Bloom County a lot over the course of this podcast. But I don't think he could pull off sentimentality as Bill Watterson could.
Yeah.
Bill Watterson could make things be sentimental without being maudlin. And I don't think Burke Breathed has the fine touch to pull that off.
No. You know, even when it is, you know, really, really the time for it, like Opus being reunited with his mother and that kind of thing, you know, it's never quite the same.
Yeah. Did I ever talk about this weird magazine feature about Opus?
Yeah, you did. But tell us again.
Oh, it's just, I remember reading this in a dentist office when I was a kid. I don't know what the magazine was, but it was like, it was a photo essay about, Opus looking for his mother, and it was a guy who I assumed was Burke Breathed, but maybe not. It was a guy with a beard. It was photos of this guy in Antarctica interacting with like seals and penguins and other stuff, and they had drawn Opus in there as well. So it was kind of like a Roger Rabbit type thing.
Huh.
And at the end of this essay, like they actually find like Opus's mother's grave, and it says on it like, "Here lies something, something." I forget if they had a name or just Opus's mother, but it says she loved her son. And it's this thing where Opus, I guess, is trying to figure, you know, he was trying to find out why he had been given up for adoption or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, you know, there was an accompanying text essay with it, which I don't remember now whether it was written by Burke Breathed or not. But if anyone knows what this is, or can find this anywhere online, please share it, because it's something that I know I read at some point. You know what?
I don't think you're making it up, but no, I've never seen this.
Maybe we could write to Burke Breathitt about this.
Yeah, good idea. Let's see if we can get in touch with him.
Because he is still alive, and maybe he would be a little more, would answer a message more likely, at least, than Bill Watterson.
Yeah. Dear Mr. Breathitt, that's our next project.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm actually going to see if I can find anything on that, because I really want to know. God, I'm really mad that Burke Breathitt looks so good for his age. What's up with that? Looks like fucking Tom Selleck.
I mean, that's probably why we don't see him do many comics, is, you know, he's too busy doing male modeling or something.
He's too busy being delicious. Let's see. On his website, I'm trying to find if there's a contact thing. There is. You can buy Opus underwear.
Opus underwear?
Yeah.
Opus wears.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's actually boxers, not tidy whities.
Oh.
So they're not like Opus underwear at all. It's just underwear with Opus on it. There is a... no, that's not what I want to do.
Contact us.
Orders@burkebreath.com. No, I don't have a question about a purchase. Is there no other...
How do I talk to Burke?
I want to talk to Burke! Come on! Well, anyway. I guess this may be an ongoing project.
Yes. But you saw it here. You heard it here as we conceived it. So, you know, keep listening to special presentation of our updates on Dear Mr. Breathitt.
Yeah, we'll figure out what this is eventually. I wonder if he even remembers it, to be honest, you know?
Yeah. He describes those years as... You know, he describes reading his old comics as, you know, waking up from a 20-year-long drunk bender and seeing all the damage you've done.
Yeah. That's the way it be.
That's the thing about being a cartoonist, is that you spend so much time with your head down over your desk, and then suddenly you look up and you've got a long white beard and you're like, what the hell have I been doing with my life? Maybe Bill Watterson didn't want to end up like that.
Yeah. Well, what's he doing with his time when he's not cartooning? Isn't he doing water paintings these days?
Yeah, he's doing watercolors. And like I said, he's got this new, interesting kind of horror themed book coming out. So.
Oh, what was what's all this now?
It's called The Mysteries.
Oh, sorry. I thought. I, for some reason, I was like, Burke Breathitt has a new book coming out? What's this one now?
Oh, I thought we were... Oh, yeah, Burke Breathitt? I don't know. I don't know what he's doing lately. Well, you said watercolors, but...
Yeah.
No, I think Burke Breathitt does airbrushing.
Yeah, his new art definitely looks a lot like something you see on the side of a van.
I've got a cartoon here with one of his art images... You know, one of his beautifully airbrushed images, and it has Opus painting it, and he's saying, come on, who'd you think did these? Breathitt can't paint his nails.
I guess the question is there anything else we should say about Dear Mr. Watterson?
Did your opinion of him change at all from seeing this?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean... I've been kind of dismissive of Bill Watterson as, you know, a pretentious crank for not wanting to take the money, I think, in some episodes. And I think that's very unfair. I think it is, you know, as goofy as it is to take a principled stand over something so, in a way, inconsequential when you could be getting so many rewards. It seems weird, but at the same time, it's like, you know... It is a hard thing to do, you know.
I think it's fair, but at the same time, I think he was right. Sometimes you have to stand up and be a pretentious crank because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that if he had merchandise, I don't think that we would think less of Calvin and Hobbes now. I mean, I think it still would endure, and you know, we'd still, I think there'd still be a lot of love for it, but you know,
I just wanted more of it. I just wanted Calvin and Hobbes to not have to end so early.
Yeah. I mean, I think like you got, I don't think it's weird, because I don't think that there's anything about, you know, I wouldn't think less of him if he sold out, you know.
Absolutely not.
But you got to be true to yourself. And I think that, it's definitely, it's a principled stand. And I don't think any of us can really understand it, you know. We can't see inside his head. We don't, you know, it's hard to really imagine making that same decision, you know, as much as I think all of us would be like, oh yeah, well, I'll never sell out. You know, I don't know how many of us would actually not sell out.
In some collections, you know? He said that, the interesting thing about writing for Calvin is that Calvin is not much like him, is that he has to take a perspective of someone totally different. So he can't draw inspiration from himself as a child or from, you know, a son that Calvin is not actually based on, you know, but I think he has more in common with Calvin than he wants to think. I think Calvin, like him, you know, even though Calvin wants to get away with as much as possible, he is also deeply concerned, you know, with fairness and justice and righteousness. And the reason that he thinks, you know, he feels like he should be able to get away with murder is because it looks like everyone else is. And, you know, he's right there. You know, the world that Calvin was born into is one where everyone's already grabbed up everything for themselves. And, you know, that is why when you're 6 years old, you live your entire year in anticipation of Christmas, because it's, you know, the one day that it feels like, you know, everything, you actually get what's coming to you.
So maybe he does have a little, I know he always talked a lot, they always say that he's Calvin's dad is the self-insert, but I think when you are, you know, when you're an artist or a creative person, there's a little bit of you in every character you make. So
he looks more like Calvin's dad. He's basically Calvin's dad with a mustache. And did I say this last time, that it's very interesting to look at Calvin and Hobbes's, or Calvin's parents, and realize that, you know, as, you know, as I've become an adult, they have felt more and more close to my age. You know, there's like, these feel like people that I would have for friends now. Whereas, with Marvin, you know, the parents in Marvin always feel like parents, like they would be telling me at age 40, go clean your room.
Yeah. That's a good point. Cause you know, the parents, they are there just to, you know, in some sense for Calvin to bounce off of, but they are characters in their own rights.
Yeah. You know, they could be a lot flatter. They could be a lot, you know, they could be just stimuluses for Calvin, but there are a lot of good stories where we get to see them, you know, their own personalities. I especially like how sometimes we see them put together and we get an idea that mom is more into the idea of Hobbes than his dad is. Mm-hmm. Like the one where they're out looking for Hobbes when he's out in the, when he got lost in the fields, and Calvin's mom kind of forgets herself and goes, Hobbes! Oh, right.
Yeah, and she even talks to him on some occasions. Yeah. I know, like with the raccoon story.
She said, "Oh, I hate when things like this happen, Hobbes. You can tell I'm upset when I start talking to you."
Yeah, and of course you have lots of bits with Calvin's dad, and you know, building character.
Yes, you know, that is intentionally built on Bill Watterson's own dad. So, you know, even though that, you know, Calvin's dad has a lot in common with Bill Watterson, especially the biking thing. The whole thing about mountain biking is just, as I've said before, that is the Bill Watterson equivalent of doing a strip about golfing.
All the cartoonists love golfing.
Yeah. And he's the one who doesn't. He likes mountain biking, so there's all these weird stuff about mountain biking. Although sometimes he covers it up by taking his complaints about mountain biking and applying it to Calvin's hobby of chewing gum.
Which oh, is pretty yeah. funny. I remember that, the chewing magazine.
Yeah. And how there's all these different magazines just for different kinds of gum chewers.
Oh man, you know, actually another thing I thought was funny is when in this documentary when they were talking about Calvin's you know, fantasy characters, you know, like mm-hmm. Spaceman Spiff or Tracer Bullet.
Yeah, they're listing all of these characters that he played. Oh, are you, I think I know what you're gonna say, but say it.
Oh, and they mentioned Safari Owl, and it's like, yeah, he was Safari. In one comic. One time.
I always wanted to see more of Safari Owl, actually.
Yeah, I was actually surprised they never did any more with Safari Owl, because I feel like there'd be a lot of potential. But I remember Spaceman Spiff and Tracer Bullet are the ones we see a lot of. But yeah. Were there other fantasy characters that
Stupendous
were recurring?
Man?
Oh, Stupendous Man. I forgot about him. Yes. Yeah. Gosh. And there
Not
are probably
that
others.
Many others, actually.
No,
unless you count, like, you know, being transmogrified into various things.
That was probably the sequence that really got me into Calvin. Yeah, actually that was the sequence that got me into Calvin and Hobbes when I was a kid. I noticed
the one where they're grabbing the gun back and forth from each other and turning themselves into different things.
that is the first thing that I saw for Calvin and Hobbes. And I remember because I'm a filthy furry. So I was like, oh, this is very interesting. So I was very excited when they had storylines like that in Calvin and Hobbes. Apparently that was I was just reading the comics page because I was a fucking little pervert. I was like, oh, gotta read Garfield for the sexy fat stuff and read Calvin and Hobbes for the sexy transformation stuff.
it's hard to argue that children have no sexual thoughts before puberty.
I mean,
but we have to maintain it just in case, because we can't go around assuming they do either.
Yeah, or else, you know, it's a dangerous thing, or else the libertarians will be like, oh, it's interesting. Maybe we should, you know, what if we just lowered these age of consents then? It's like, no, let's not do that. Also, it's like, gotta read Bloom County for the sexy nose inflation. Though I think
how's your nose transplant, Opus? Give us a thumbs up. As you can see, that is no thumb.
Yeah. All right.
We have talked about this movie for longer than its runtime, so I think the movie had an effect on us.
Yes. Despite our digression into Taco Bell and Weird Al.
Well, you know, just like Calvin, we have a really hard time focusing on what we're supposed to be doing. So,
well, how did you feel about this documentary at the end of it?
I was prepared to cringe because I thought it was going to be, you know, more of that maudlin, like, oh, Calvin and Hobbes was the best comic ever. Nothing could ever replace it. But they did get a lot more into the, you know, nitty gritty of what went wrong and why and how it affected people. So I was prepared to not like this, but I ended up liking a lot of it. I especially like getting to see the world of Chagrin Falls, the world of Calvin and Hobbes really brought to life, which I got to see just myself just last year when I visited Connecticut for the first time in the fall. And it was like, wow, this is where Calvin lived, isn't it? That maybe not this far north, but it was, you know, it just, this is what the Midwest is like. I can get used to this. They have rain there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not like out here. Yeah, no, I would agree. I could do with less of the fanboy stuff. I was kind of afraid that would be all that this documentary was. And I would, of course, really would have liked them to have actually been able to get Bill Watterson to appear, because without him actually appearing, it does ultimately kind of feel like, well, why are you doing this? Why are you even bothering? But at the same time, you know, there was still some very interesting information. You know, there was a little, I didn't learn anything that new, but it was interesting to hear other cartoonists' takes on him because he is such a giant in that field. And there is something to be said for, you know, listening to, you know, people who, you know, are also, you know, passionate about cartooning and good at cartooning and understand cartooning, and hearing them talk about, you know, their hero. That was interesting. And that was, you know, there's something to that, I think. So I could have been better, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
Would you want someone to make a documentary like this about you?
Well, if someone made a documentary like this about me, they would very easily get me to be in it.
Yes.
Because they'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, did you say you were going to be giving me some attention? Yes, please.
Yeah, they would have people trying to talk about you, and then you'd sort of stick your head through on the camera and start talking over them.
Yeah, I'd be like, hello?
You'd be like a Muppet.
So is this about me? So if someone was like, we're doing a documentary on Mike, and then like there'd be like I would disappear from my house in a puff of smoke shaped like me, like a Looney Tune, and just suddenly reappear at their side. Hello. So yeah, well, how about you? Would you like a documentary about you?
Let me clean up my room first.
Well, let me rephrase that. I think, would you like a documentary? Not necessarily a you know, because there can be documentaries that, you know, show the nitty gritty and the warts and all. A documentary like this one, which is, you know, a little more fawning, let's say.
Good question. I mean, I'm trying to think of the things that people would be fawning over me for. And honestly, if it's not this podcast, I don't know if I'd want to hear it.
Well, I don't know. What if,
maybe the Hungry Reader, but I don't know.
Well, you know, I heard you made a mean yakitori. Not yakitori. What is that pancake? What's that pancake?
Oh,
called?
The okonomiyaki. Yeah, that's right.
You that. That was fucking good as hell.
I gotta get you the recipe so you can make the sauce yourself. It's super easy.
I mean, yeah. I just got a bunch of kale. I don't know what to do with it, so now I gotta make one. But yeah, so that was Calvin and Hobbes, or hello, Mr.
No,
dear Mr. Watterson, dear Mr. Watterson.
Jesus loves you more than you will know. Yeah. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
And clearly, I mean, I think he wouldn't be on that. He wouldn't be in the documentary. He wouldn't be in the searching for Mr. Water. What is it? Searching for Calvin Hobbes.
Yeah,
he should come on our show.
Yeah.
He should listen to this episode. And I think he'd be like, you know what? I don't, because he was probably like, those guys, they're all just want to blow smoke up my ass and tell me how good I am. I want to go on this podcast with these two dumbasses who can't stop talking about Taco Bell and Weird Al.
This is the generation you raised, Mr. Watterson.
Yeah.
This is the people who, the kids who looked at Calvin and Hobbes and was like, that's me. One of those is me.
Yep.
I've said in the past that often I feel like the Hobbes to Mike's Calvin. And I think that's a very appropriate. I think when I say that, everyone knows exactly what I mean. And you know, we have Mr. Watterson to thank for that.
That's right. That's us. Next week's episode, we're going to fight over a transmogrifier gun.
Next week is going to be the fan-created episode where Mike takes ADHD pills and suddenly I'm just a toy.
Oh, man, there's like a dozen of those, aren't
there? Yeah, people really want that to be the real ending. It's like, fuck you, assholes. No.
Yeah. It's weird because it's like, well, first of all, that's kind of not how that's not how that medication works, you know, like being able to not have like eight voices screaming at you in your head doesn't mean suddenly you have no imagination, you know? And also it's just like kind of weirdly depressing. It's like, oh, you want a depressing end? Okay. We all feel bad. All right. Whatever, man.
You know, there's a bunch of fan created comics that have like Calvin as an adult and Hobbes has been adopted by his son or daughter or something. And I don't think that's how that would work either.
No, I mean, that's right. I guess they're going for that Toy Story thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's not really it. I mean, honestly, I don't know.
You know, when you see the fan-created stuff, you really understand why Bill Watterson didn't want anyone else affecting this story that he was telling.
You know, yeah, you're right. I really do. Because that's the thing is, like, people, when people like something, you know, they want to be part of it. They want to contribute to it. They want to kind of, you know, put their own stamp on it. And, you know, sometimes it's not a bad instinct. Sometimes it's, you know, it's charming. But yeah, all this fan created stuff, it really does show, like, look, you guys, sorry, you don't have the chops. You don't know the story he was telling. It's fine, you know, fan content, if you make it for yourself, it's fine. But it just shows there's a gulf here. And yeah, I would not want any of this fan content to be official, you know? Like, it's fine for people to do it on the side, but if you saw an official Calvin Hobbes or Calvin was like, now I'm the grandpa, and my son has Hobbes, it'd be like, oh, we're God. It's like the fucking end of Harry Potter where they're like, oh, now I'm an adult. And look, it's like, yeah, oh my
so,
God.
That was so transparent, like, you know. That was such a weird scene. I didn't even read the book, but I saw the movie and it was like they were aware that suddenly time had passed and now they were adults. It was so badly written.
Oh, so bad. So bad. And I mean, and yeah, and sticking out is bad in a Harry Potter universe.
That's saying something. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, like with Calvin Hobbes, like Stephen Pastis is probably correct. You know, it is about maintaining control. And, you know, this is a vision he had and he didn't want anyone muck it up. I mean, I think, you know, I understand that because, like, you know, we all do, you know, we're all creative people. We all do creative projects.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, if you're lucky, you have some fans who may want to be involved and may want to, you know, create their own little fan fan stuff of it. Yeah. And there's a lot of time you look at it, you're like, that's cute. And I like that you like it enough to do that, but it's wrong. You know? And that's being very mean, but like, it is just like, look, it's just not, it's not, it's fine. It's not no. something, it should not be part of the actual thing. It should stay as a fan thing. So.
Yes. Like they said in Marvel Comics, is like, you know, if you like creating your own fan characters or whatever, that's great. But don't send them to us. We don't want you to litigate us if we do something that's similar.
Yes. I mean, yeah. That's exactly it. Anyway, I guess that's it for Calvin Hobbes.
Yep. Dear Mr. Watterson. Boy, what if there was a book that was like Dear Mr. Henshaw, but with a cartoonist? I would want to read that.
Hmm.
Hey, maybe how you should adapt Dear Mr. Henshaw for a movie, so you have something more to look at.
I mean, you know, not a bad idea.
Hey, right. You know, once again, we return to just, you know, gushing over how much we love Beverly Cleary in every episode.
God bless her. All right.